Maybe the mayor of Fargo shouldn't be a full-time job. Some second thoughts, apparently, at City Hall. Maybe Mike Lindell does want to run for governor. He's talking that way, has been for a while, but doubling down on it today. And maybe there won't be too much long-lasting backlash over Jimmy Kimmel's comments. He's back on the air with Sinclair starting tonight. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Ahlstrom here with you for the Steve Ahlstrom Show. It's a Friday afternoon, and it sure feels like a Friday afternoon in the summer of 2025, even though it is the fall. Windy today. That's been a little change from the last few days, but that same nice weather that we've had all week, the warm temps, are here, and still for a few more days. It's going to be a great weekend. Hope you can get out and enjoy a lot of it. I'm looking forward to it. I've been inside a lot this week, inside an office, inside a car. I am really looking forward to being outside and getting some of this good old vitamin D. So I hope you're able to do that as well. We got a packed show today. Usually Fridays are a little harder to get people that want to come on the radio. Late on a Friday afternoon, people trying to stretch out the weekend a little bit, but we got a handful of guests coming your way today on the program. Rocky Schneider from Downtown Community Partnership will be here. Yesterday, we talked about the Downtown Community Partnership's search to make downtown more user-friendly when it comes to things like park benches and signs and so forth. We're going to find out a little bit about that and then how they decide on the consultants they use and what they will actually use those consultants for. Downtown Fargo is its own story, right? I mean, there's a news story just about every day on Downtown Fargo. And we were talking a little bit about that and when are consultants needed, when are they not, especially with all the research and information that's out there available online for free. When do consultants get hired? So we'll ask a few questions and get some perspective about that from Rocky. Keith Gross will be here. You probably have not heard of him, but he's got a long and distinguished resume. He's a legal analyst, former assistant state attorney and prosecutor for the state of Florida. With Jim Comey being indicted by the Department of Justice, my big question is, will the charges stand up? Depends on who you talk to. About half the people I've read say yes. About half the people I've read say no. So you don't indict somebody like that unless you feel like you've got something, you know, very solid to go by. Because if you swing and miss on that, that can be a pretty embarrassing blunder. So we'll talk to him about that. And then before we finish up, Matt Simon will be here. He's the new chairman of the North Dakota Republican Party. He's been on kind of a tour de force here over the last few months, and we've been trying to get a time that works out for him to check in on the show, and we were able to work that out today. So lots of good stuff on the way today, including a lot of other news stories. Some of them I touched on already. We have a new Teacher of the Year from the Red River Valley, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Higher health insurance premiums coming next year. We got more reason to believe that that's going to really be a thing. An update on Donald Trump's $1 million gold card for people looking for citizenship. And some inflation news today that was kind of a yawner, but it really shouldn't be. So we'll get into all that today here on the show. 701-271-1100 is the phone number. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They have recently expanded. They can get you in fast. They have occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner as well. So valleychristian.co. If you need a little help, we all do from time to time, right? Want to dump your bucket, have someone help you sort out some things, they can do that. But physical therapy, occupational therapy, they do it all there. I'm coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. They've got me in a beautiful, brand new Lincoln Navigator vehicle, nicest car that I've ever driven, and they make car buying fun and easy and super quick as well. You'll do well to find out what they can do for you. You see a lot of those Lincolns here in this area, and most of them are coming from Wahpeton because they're doing such a great job serving their customers and getting the word out about what they do. And so I'm excited to bring you their story here as we go through the next few months as well. All right, we have an email address that's open for business as well, studio at flagfamily.com. The text line can take a text message to 701-237-1590. But we love phone calls at 271-1100. So please do join in on the conversation today. No possible way I can think of everything there is to say. You all know a lot more than I do on many of these issues we talk about, so let's learn together. We're going to start by doing that with the 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on a busy and eventful day. And we're going to start with the almanac today, September 26th, 2025, my mom's birthday. I've kind of lost track of the years, but I know the mom's birthday is today. So mom is not listening because she lives a long way away and she doesn't do the whole streaming thing. But gave her a call earlier today and had to leave a message. I'll get back to her here hopefully this evening. She lives in an area that doesn't have good cell reception. So the chances of me actually talking to my mom is kind of like winning the lottery. It's a little sad, to be quite honest with you. And she's just not going to try all that hard to make sure that she can get to a place where there's good cell reception. So I get lucky once in a while, spin the wheel, and hopefully you catch mom. But she's got my message at least, and so she knows that I called to wish her happy birthday today. All right, average high 67, average low 44, record high 90 in 1979, record low 19 in 1965. Right now in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, we're sitting at 83, so well above average today. Can tell you that the sunrise this morning was at 7:19, and the sunset will be at 7:16. In the market today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 299 points to close at 46,247. The S&P 500 was up 38 to finish at 6,643, and the NASDAQ up 99 to close at 22,484. I believe the Dow and the S&P 500 closed at record high levels today. So we continue to see a very good investing environment here across our fine country. WTI crude oil ticking up just a little bit again today. We've seen a little bit of that. We were in that 62, 63 range for a long time. And now we've seen it edge upward just a little bit. Generally, that's a bullish sign. Means the economy is moving around pretty good. And we heard good news on the GDP yesterday. So maybe we do have some good things going on with our economic activity, even though it seems a little goofy with inflation and the job market these days. WTI crude oil today, oh, I said that, 65.19. Gold today, $18.70 of upside. Closing price today, $3,789. Silver was up $1.25 today, almost 3 percentage points at $46.35. Bitcoin today, basically unchanged at $109,000. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.14. In North Dakota, it's $2.91. Minnesota, $2.98. And South Dakota, $2.94. In the news today, the Fargo City Commission, reports WDAY Radio, will consider a recommendation to push off a decision to potentially convert the mayor's role into a full-time position. An item on the agenda for Monday night's meeting, the 29th, says the panel will take up the matter, quote, to delay indefinitely the full-time mayor position. The panel had initially voted in favor of a study to look into the possibility before the 2026 mayoral election. Mayor Tim Mahoney, who is going to be leaving the office next year because he is termed out, backed the idea of changing it to a full-time status with an annual salary of $100,000. But it looks like now at this point that is not going to get much more run in the commission meeting. So that'll be interesting to find out kind of what the story was on that. A meeting going on today down at City Hall. And the Fargo Convention Center Committee is expected to move one step closer today in this meeting to nail down some finalists for the site of a new convention center here in Fargo. So there were 9 presentations over 3 weeks, and they are going to be narrowing that down. The mayor told us to maybe 3 or 4. And go from there. So we'll see. There may be some news coming out of that meeting. Now, we've got a call in to some folks on that one. And if we hear anything, we'll make sure to pass that along to you. Congratulations to Franny Tunseth of Mayville, Portland, Clifford, Galesburg. She was named today North Dakota's 2026 Teacher of the Year. And it happened at a ceremony at the North Dakota Capitol earlier today. She helps students in grades 4 through 8 who need a little extra help with math and reading. So she's been in it for 11 years, and her students say that she is absolutely fantastic. Congratulations to Franny. Also in the news today, MyPillow founder Mike Lindell says he is taking steps toward running for Minnesota governor. Now, he's been on our airwaves a couple of times saying, I am taking a good look at it, but double down on it today. He said he told the Star Tribune that he has reestablished residency in Minnesota after recently living in Texas, and he said he would need to reestablish Minnesota residency to run for governor. Candidates must live in the state for at least 1 year before the general election. Lindell said in an interview, we're about 99% there of a possible governor's run. I love the state. I love the country. And if I'm the only one that can win, that would be a shame if that opportunity slipped by. So then you'd have Kendall Qualls. You'd have Scott Jensen. You'd have Kristen Robbins. Philip Carlson, I think his name is. And then Mike Lindell. But no official announcement yet. North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer says he supports the Department of Justice's decision to indict former FBI Director James Comey, but did express some concern about the possible ramifications. He was on Scott Hennin's What's on Your Mind program earlier today and said, you don't get off the hook for these things just because you were a public official. But he said, you have to worry about what that might mean for Republicans in next year's midterm elections. The thought being there that if people feel like you are out as a party trying to just settle political scores, that it might not look good if you are going to that level to bring out former FBI directors. So we'll see. Kevin says, I'm for it, but we got to be careful. Sinclair Broadcast Group is bringing back Jimmy Kimmel's late night show tonight, ending a brief blackout for dozens of cities across the U.S. in the wake of the comments that were made by Kimmel over Charlie Kirk's killing. Sinclair Broadcast Group is one of two groups, Nexstar the other, that even though ABC said we're bringing him back earlier this week, they said we will not take that program, but they have changed their mind. Sinclair has. So maybe there won't really be much fallout after all. At one point, thought he might get fired. Who knows what might happen? Lose a job permanently, but now it looks like we're only Nexstar away from being back to where things were before. Reuters says expect to pay more for health coverage next year. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, but they did a survey of employers, and they found that employers are looking at about a 10% increase for 2026 in health insurance premiums. That's the biggest increase in health costs in more than a decade. Oh, goody, right? CNBC reports that the global wealthy are lining up to buy one of Donald Trump's $1 million gold cards. He slashed the price of his gold card immigration plan from $5 million to $1 million. And Howard Lutnick said the government plans to issue about 80,000 of the gold cards together with potential platinum cards and the new H-1B visa fees, which were raised $100,000. Lutnick says the programs are expected to raise $100 billion in federal revenue. I like the creative way of thinking. My head spins a little bit sometimes when the plan is always changing. But I guess this is, the president's got the authority to do it. And if he can raise $100 billion, well, then that's worth something for sure. So maybe we get to a good place in the long run. The Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge today showed inflationary pressures remained elevated in August. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Index rose from July to August 0.3%. And it is year over year 2.7% higher than last year. Now, this is in line with what economists were expecting. And 0.3% is fairly tame, I guess. You'd say 3.6% annualized, so that's a little hotter than normal. But 2.7%, not all that crazy. So I think it's another brick in the wall, if you want to build the argument, that the tariff plan and President Trump's economic trade plan, international trade plan, has been mildly inflationary, but hasn't set anything on fire. I think that's how you'd honestly have to take a look at it. And finally, Starbucks reports the Associated Press says it's closing hundreds of stores in the U.S., Canada, and Europe and laying off 900 non-retail employees as they focus more on a turnaround. The Seattle coffee giant said store closures would start immediately, and baristas who are affected will be offered severance packages and transfers to other locations where possible. The company would not give a number of stores that are closing, but the bulk of them appear to be in the U.S. and Canada. The company says it expects to have 18,300 North American locations when its fiscal year ends on Sunday. As of June 29th, the company had 18,734. And those, friends, are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. A little bit of everything in the 4 o'clock wrap today. When we come back, North Dakota school kids say, we kind of like the new phone policy. Can't have a phone during the school day. Very interesting. You wouldn't have thought. We'll talk about that coming up next. Beautiful Friday afternoon. Hope you got great plans for the weekend. Get out and enjoy. We don't know how many of these weekends we have left. It seems like when it's really nice in the fall, we have a great string of weather. We just fall off a cliff. When it comes to an end, we crash hard. So hopefully that won't be the case, but it seems that happens more often than not. I want to talk a little bit about a story that we covered quite a bit during the last legislative session. Lawmakers in Bismarck said that all North Dakota public schools must set their school up so that kids cannot have their cell phones in their possession during the school day. Too distracting. Kids are on their phones when they should be learning. Tough for the teachers. All those things. A million different reasons it went through. And they did make some exceptions. If you got a medical condition, you can have your phone with you. There are certain things that are on the list of exceptions there. Well, Bismarck Tribune has done a little bit of digging around, I guess, or talking to people within the school districts to find out what they think about it. And I was surprised, and I guess not really surprised, but I'm surprised that whenever I see reporting on this kind of a story, it comes out that kids are fairly tolerant of this whole thing. I guess I thought that kids would, for the most part, really resist this. But they talked to two Bismarck public school kids, one a 14-year-old, a gal, and one a 12-year-old boy. And both of them said, no big deal. The girl, an eighth grader, said it's been a lot less drama. There were a lot of kids last year that went to the bathroom to use their phones, and now we don't have that. She said she's noticed the teachers are getting more attention from students, and she said she also feels more focused during the school day. 12-year-old boy, the seventh grader, said he has also seemed to notice that students are more focused. He said, quote, it feels normal. So isn't that interesting? Feels normal. He said not having his phone during school hours will help him be a better student. Huh. The superintendent of Bismarck School said they thought it was going to be a tough sell, but it hasn't been that bad. He said we've only had 50 incidents, disciplinary incidents, where, you know, kids have been found to be sneaking their phone around. He said, but we've got 14,000 kids in our district, so that's not really much of anything. He said, we have seen an increase in medical exemption requests from kids from parents who want their kids to have access to their phones during the day to monitor medical conditions. And the district is being pretty lenient, accommodating those things right there. But the superintendent said it would help us a little bit if lawmakers could clarify what types of medical professionals can authorize the medical exemption. This is a good question. I'm curious to hear what you think about this. If you have a kid in public school, I got into a conversation with a guy at the gym the other day about it, and he's like, I just don't know why they can't have their phone. What's the big deal? What if you got to get a hold of your kid for something? And I didn't say much because I have opinions on this. I think what they're doing makes sense, and I didn't want to argue about it. But how many times during the school day do you have to get a hold of your kid, really? And if you need them to know something, they can't really do much about it till the school day is done anyway. So if you send them a text, they get their phone at the end of the day, and they catch up on what they need to. But what do you think? If you got kids in public school, how has that worked for your kid? What are you sensing? If you happen to be riding in the car with mom and dad and you want to weigh in, or if you're, I guess, old enough to drive on your own, if you're a student, I would love to hear from you today. Is it a problem? Do you like it? Do you hate it? What do you think? What have you noticed around school? Would love to hear from you, 701-271-1100. All right, we got a check of news, weather. We're going to talk downtown Fargo coming up in just a few minutes as well. First, though, let's check in the newsroom, get the headlines of the day. Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center has dedicated his professional life to transforming smiles and restoring confidence one patient at a time. When you meet him, you'll feel it. It's not just his job, it's a calling. At Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, Dr. Eaton helps everybody, young, seasoned, and everyone in between. Whether you need a single tooth or a full mouth restoration, he's here to help with skill, compassion, and experience. Talk about an unbeatable combination. Whether you've been hiding your smile for years or if you're ready for a fresh start, trust his skill, compassion, and experience. Visit DakotaDentalImplant.com today. DakotaDentalImplant.com today. Talk to a couple people that have been to see him, and they say it's just like having a brand new life. Their confidence, joy, it's just they smile more. It's absolutely fantastic when people are able to transform their smiles. Well, we are pleased to be joined in studio today by Rocky Schneider, and Rocky is the executive director of the Downtown Community Partnership, and very thankful. Rocky, most people don't agree to come on and do the show at 4:39 on Friday afternoons because they're ready to start the weekend, so thank you for doing this.
Well, I don't mind coming out here. It's a beautiful place out here, and I'm always happy to talk about downtown.
Yeah, well, and Rocky's a fixture in our building. He does a show on WDAY radio at the other end of the hall on Fridays, Friday from 11 to noon. And so two trips over here today, so we appreciate being back over here. How's it going down there? You enjoy doing that show? You've been doing it now for a few months?
Yeah, I think I'm on episode 25, so 25 mm-hmm. weeks of it, and it's fun. It's fun to get to talk to somebody different every week and just highlight stuff going on.
Yeah. My wife and I love downtown Fargo. We have for a long time, but we've kind of been torn the last, I don't know, few years. It seems like there's just been more things that have made us nervous about going downtown. But we did head down. I talked about it a lot on my show the day of and the day after. We went down for dinner. We're like, you know what? You got to live too. And there's a lot of good business people downtown, and they're trying to make it ends meet, and we know about all the things that are talked about with downtown Fargo. We had a great time, and I told people that we went. It was a quiet evening, beautiful night in the summer. We weren't bothered by anybody. Downtown Fargo is a lightning rod subject in this city, in this town, but there's, I guess, for every bad thing, you can find five good things if you look for them, right?
Yeah, you know, it's you're not alone in that conversation. I think COVID really hit downtowns hard across the country, and it took a while to rebound. But when I am downtown every day, it's vibrant. We got, you know, every weekend there's 40,000 visitors to downtown. So it's unlike anywhere else in the region, right?
That's true.
So it's going to be different. You're going to mm-hmm. have all types. But we do have challenges as well. We're not unlike every other downtown right now. And homelessness is a growing concern everywhere. And those problems don't really start in downtown, but that's where they end up because you need to consolidate services and they have to consolidate somewhere. But I think what we haven't figured out yet is how do you manage the impacts of offering services?
Yeah, yeah, and that's its own show. Probably its own two-hour special town hall. You know, there's a lot there. The job of taking what's happening downtown and letting people know about it is a complicated one because you have to, as you talk about a lot of things to a lot of different people. But there is a spirit there in the downtown area where there are businesses that are fighting and growing and doing their best. There are people that love going down there enjoying things. And that plaza that was that Broadway Square area where it's green space. It's not real grass, but it looks nice. And there's a skating rink in the wintertime. That part of it, I think, it really provided a spark to the downtown area, that plaza area. And even today, if we go down there, I bet there's a ton of people eating ice cream and being out there. It's just a little oasis in the middle of all the concrete and steel.
Yeah, Broadway Square, I call it the busiest little park in the city. And so I'm the administrator of that in the summer. And it's still, you know, probably the most visited place day in and day out in the state of North Dakota. And so it's one of those things that it's joyful. You walk out there and there's kids in the splash pad. There's people eating ice cream. There's a business meeting going on. It's a nice little mix in a little area.
There have been some retail businesses that have moved out. How is that trend? Are we trending even like when somebody moves in, is there somebody or moves out, does somebody move in? Are we backsliding a little bit? Are we growing a little bit? What's that look like?
Yeah, you know, there's always new businesses opening and old businesses closing, right? It's just like any other business, and they're all small businesses that don't, they're not franchises that last for eternity. But things are probably a little slower, but I think that's pretty general across the city right now. When you look at commercial space and startup, you know, is now a good time to start a new business. It's a tough time out there, I think, yeah, to get interest rates and everything else. So we're probably not replacing quite as fast. So there's opportunities out there, but there are a lot of new businesses opening up. Just yesterday, I think at the Renaissance Zone Authority at the city, they're proposing a $93 million apartment complex downtown. And so, you know, and then the,
Where's that at?
It's going to be in the old power plant location over by Wild Terror and the cold storage building.
Okay.
Right where the Nestor used to be, if that's a better reference.
The old Nestor. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Interesting.
So there's always something. You know, Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater is going in. Bell Bank just made a $100 million commitment.
Yeah, they did. So, that place is unbelievable.
You know, when I was growing up, nobody talked about downtown, and that was the death of it, right? And so the fact that everyone loves to talk about downtown and it's the hot button topic, I'll take that over the opposite.
What are, is it more, I would guess with maybe some vacancy, it's maybe never been as affordable as it is to be downtown Fargo if you wanted to start a shop down there.
Yeah, don't tell all my landlord friends, I guess, but yeah, I mean, it's a good time to make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to start a new business, we're actually working with a couple of the landlords right now for people looking to do seasonal pop-up shops because we'd love to fill those storefronts.
I know Chief Cebulski was talking about trying to ramp up more patrols downtown during the bar closing time. That's kind of one of the spots. Nobody seems to have a great answer yet for how we handle that. Obviously, you got a ton of people. They all kind of spill out at the same time. Have you, as head of downtown community partnership, have you been pleased with Fargo Police's response to try to do what they can over there?
You know, this is an ongoing discussion, and I love working with every single officer down to a one. They've all been great. It's a resource management issue right now. When they have put downtown in their focus, it's been great, and we've seen the results. But as soon as the focus goes away from downtown, we see issues pop back up. And so I don't know if that's a management issue or if that's a resource management issue or they need more officers, you know, probably all of the above, but it works. The police do a good job, but they gotta get pointed to the right direction.
So how are we doing right now? Are we in a good focus or are we kind of drifting? Are we in an up or a down right now?
You know, week to week, I probably have a different answer to that question. This summer was great. We have school resource officers that bolster up the police force. And then when the schools go back in, they lose, you know, 8 or 9 officers or something like that back to schools or more than that. I don't even know. Mm. And so we're down officers right now. So I think we could use more officers in the city budget for sure.
Okay. I think I catch what you're saying. I want to talk to you a little bit about the plan that you're doing there. The refresh and expand plan is how I have seen it characterized in the media. And you all put out a release to the media saying, hey, we're trying to figure out how to do a couple of things, whether it's benches or signage, to do things right and expanding public seating into more areas beyond Broadway. I'll let you talk about this. What problem are you trying to solve right now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things, if you don't keep looking at all of your amenities you offer as a business and say, is this still what people need? Is this still what they want? At some point, you're too late to make the changes. But making change in the policy arena is tough, right? People fear change regardless of what that change is. And so what we want is just stay as ahead of it. And one of my big pet peeves is with the city infrastructure and the public right of way, if we're not keeping our things up to date, how can you ask businesses to do that, right? It's the broken window theory where if there's a broken window, someone else is going to throw a rock through that same window. So this summer it was, you know, we worked with the city to get all the streetlights painted because they were looking pretty worn and shoddy. We fixed some of the roadways, the ADA compliance issues, because we want businesses to keep up their end of the bargain too. And so we got to do that. We have 14 pedestrian wayfinding signs right now that are all out of date and they don't get used very much. And so what can we do with those amenities? We have recycling bins that some, you know, get used a lot and some don't. Do we need to move them around? Do we need to find new locations? Mm. And then benches have been an ongoing discussion for years. Public seating is a vital amenity. But, you know, if you look on Google Images, you can go back in time, right? And you can see some of these benches were put in front of places that now have been developed, right? And so now there's a business door right in front of the bench.
Yeah.
And Broadway Square, for instance, there was nothing. There was a parking lot, and there was a bench there. That made sense. Now you have a bench next to a park when the park has all this seating too, the design is not the same anymore. And so we looked at relocating those. Where can we make, other than Broadway, walkable? Now that downtown's growing, can we incentivize people to start moving off Broadway and expand it?
I did a little research before we got together today, and of your budget, tell me if I'm seeing this about right. Your budget is somewhere about $500,000 a year to do the things that you do, and about a third of that comes from the city of Fargo supporting Downtown Community Partnership. Is that accurate?
It's a close approximation. It's a little different than that now. So we actually have two organizations that I administer. There's the DCP, which is funded by memberships, some city support, and events.
Yep.
And then we also are in charge of the Business Improvement District. And so the work we're doing on these amenities is through the Business Improvement District.
I see.
It's about an $800,000 budget a year, and that's a taxing entity. That's the only one in the state, but any city can do it. But businesses downtown, they all pay an additional tax into the Business Improvement District. So this is business-specific funded efforts that we do.
Okay.
This is putting up the holiday lights. It's our guys in blue in the bid uniforms cleaning up garbage every day, emptying garbage cans, keeping things clean and maintained. That's all paid for by a business tax. And so the work we're doing, we hired a firm called Confluence, which is a local firm. They are helping us design new signage so that we can say up to date, look at other cities, what's best practices these days, those sort of things. Stuff we just don't have the capacity in-house to handle. And they also are helping us with city relocation of benches. Like, where else does public seating needed downtown? Where is there potential to put them? And where could we remove them? Where is it we have an abundance of seating? And so that's all done through this special taxing district that businesses pay into. And I think that's important because downtown has a lot of amenities you don't see anywhere else in town, anywhere else in the state. That's because we formed a special district that businesses approved of.
Yeah.
Then they all pay that additional tax.
Got it. So if someone, and I have to admit, yesterday when I saw this story, I said, okay, is this another one where our tax money is going toward another consultant to come in and help with something? Because it seems like whenever City Hall has a question or we got to figure out a problem, we hire a consultant and we hear they got $300,000, $500,000. I think to myself, a lot of the things that you're trying to solve, like just go to Grok on, and just AI search who's doing this right, who's doing this thing well, that thing well. But you're telling me that the Business Improvement District is really coming from the businesses that are down there, and whatever we're spending on that is basically coming from the community itself. It's not everybody as taxpayers is funding that. Am I getting that correct?
Correct. No, okay. It's no individual tax dollars. These are businesses that pay an extra. And the contract we have is $17,000. And so, I'm certainly sensitive to the, hire a consultant so they can go up and take the arrows and make the decisions. And if it fails, you can blame the consultant.
Sure.
I understand that, but this is not what we're doing. We need some expertise. We have our day jobs to do. And so we needed to add some capacity, an extension of our staff and team.
So you spent 17 grand to have Confluence come up with some planning for you.
Right. Out of our $800,000 annual budget.
Yeah. And that's a fair number. And you're right. There are certain times I was like, hey, people that do this, we could probably figure it out. But in that proportion certainly makes a lot of sense.
I can go on YouTube and learn how to change my oil too, but I still take it to Jiffy.
I get that.
Yeah.
Tell me what you hope to get out of this, because at face value, I don't understand why does it matter so much where the benches are? Like, why is this something that you guys would say, let's spend some money and do this right? Don't you just say, let's put one here, a couple blocks from there? Is there a science behind benches maybe more than I realize?
Yeah, so the bench relocation is about $5,000 worth of that study. And a lot of that is just going out and identifying, okay, how much seating do you need in a city our size and a density that we have, and figuring out where infrastructure can be placed that makes sense. Some of that we could probably do in-house too, but we have other stuff we're doing as well. So it's an expansion of capacity on some of it. For the signs design, I don't know how to design a sign. And so, you got to use the signage expert to go.
What do we need
the
signs to do now? What is it? What kind of signs do you think you might need here?
Yeah. So, we have, 600,000 different people that come to downtown every year. And so we need signs. Just if you go to any big city or any walking around, where's parking at?
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to go see? Is it museums, the murals? Where's NDSU's campus? Where's the hospital?
Yeah.
Where's the Fargo Theater? Where's the City Hall or the library? The biggest one we got back is, where are the public restrooms? Those type of questions where if you're a tourist walking around, which we have hotels downtown, a lot of tourism, those things help. Wayfinding, point to where you're going.
Yeah, makes sense. There are people, I'm sure, because I got a text from somebody yesterday and said, I do business downtown, or I part of a partnership that owns a business downtown. We don't want a bench near our place because it's just another place where a homeless person is going to sleep and all the things that happen there. What do you say to those people? Like, I don't want benches near where I do business.
You know, it's the unfortunate situation we're in where it's almost unanimous that every business on Broadway wants all the benches removed. And I think they all know the value of benches and public seating. And so it's gotten to the point where they've taken something they valued and it made it not a benefit. And so it's a sacrifice they're asking for. I don't think we're ready to remove all public seating because we know there's a value in public seating. And I think the businesses do too. But what I've been pushing with the city is we need to find a way to regulate and manage our amenities. You can't just put amenities everywhere if you don't have the budget to manage them properly. And so it's not a solution for homelessness. We have that issue going. We need to find solutions for homelessness to regulate the impacts. Part of that is moving the engagement center, which is a big topic this week. Just the spillover and, you know, and honestly, the sleeping on benches doesn't bother me personally. What bothers me is the illegal behavior that happens on them. Sleeping, someone's got to be somewhere. That's my kind of opinion on it. But if you're sitting there and harassing people walking by, if you're sitting there drinking open in the public, which we've seen a lot of, and we increased our ordinances this year to punish, you know, increase the punishment of public drinking. I think there was 131 citations for public intoxication downtown this summer. A lot of those happened during the day on benches. And so things like that, where it's like, if we need to manage that better. And yeah, it's become an amenity we don't deserve if we can't manage it.
It's a big question. It is. And I can see it both sides. You have a difficult riddle to solve on that one. Rocky, I appreciate you coming by today. Thanks for filling in some of the blanks. A lot of this is really helpful information to understand. Some of it gets into the weeds, and to be able to sort it out is very helpful. So thanks for doing it.
And I think at the end of the day, hopefully people come down and they like their experience and they can find their parking.
Yeah. Yes. And find a place to sit when they need one.
Yes.
Very good. Thanks, Rocky. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Rocky Schneider, Executive Director of the Downtown Community Partnership and the Business Improvement District as well, joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Back after this. Good conversation there with Rocky. Just reading between the lines, I thought the comments were interesting on a couple of things. Well, not reading between the lines. He just came out and said, the businesses on Broadway do not want park benches. They do not want benches there. And it's because of what our texter that sent in that note earlier said, that, hey, you know, I get it. Good to have a bench there once in a while, but people that we don't want there are doing things that we don't want them to do on those benches. And so interesting that thought it was pretty unanimous about that. And then the other part of it too is you could tell he was trying to choose his words carefully, but I think what I'm picking up on the conversation about the police patrols downtown is there just needs to be consistency there. With having officers on the street, because we all know you have to have that deterrence. And if you see officers there on a regular basis ahead of time, trying to just show their presence and show that they're there, then that's going to cut off a lot of stuff before it ever happens. So I thought it was a good conversation there. And this is why I need to throttle back once in a while before I start getting worked up about here we are hiring consultants. And when you find out what Downtown Community Partnership is, where their money comes from and the amount they spent on something like this, it makes sense. And it doesn't have to be anything about tax money. Top 5 at 5 coming up next. Live from the Drive with Vision studio, it's the Steve Hallstrom Show. Final hour of the week here on our local broadcasting. Mark Levin, though, coming up right after this. And Mark Levin, boy, what a day, what a week. There are so many crazy stories in the news cycle day. He's going to break them all down as only the great one can. That comes up right after our show wraps up here at 6 p.m. We've got a lot of ground to cover here in the second hour of the show. It is a busy final stretch here of the week. Coming up in just a few minutes, Keith Gross will be with us, former assistant state attorney for the state of Florida. We're going to talk about the James Comey indictment. I have to be honest with you, I haven't followed this much at all. We all know Comey, FBI director, and a lot of people think that he was very directly involved with a fraudulent activity in regard to the Russiagate, Russian collusion investigation of Donald Trump, and now two counts he's been indicted on. So we're going to find out, do they have a case? How is this going to work? Do you do this? Do you do this indictment if you can't win it? So we'll dive into that here coming up in just a few minutes with Keith. And then Matt Simon, the new chairman of the North Dakota Republican Party, will be with us. I have been of the opinion that the party's been solid but a little sleepy over the last few years. So what role is there for the party within politics in North Dakota? Obviously, North Dakota is definitely a red state. But what role is there for the party itself in trying to be on a big stage across the state when it comes to political conversations, and what are his ideas on how to bring unity? There's a lot of dissension within the ranks of Republicans in the state. It's a very diverse group of people. And so we'll find out from Chair Simon what he wants to do to fix all of that. Before we finish up, Lee Brice doesn't care if you want to take shots at him about his love for Charlie Kirk, and he's coming to town. So lots of things yet to do. But we start with the top five at five. These are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. And I try to find stories that kind of matter to us more so than, well, that's just interesting to know, but stories that impact how we live, how we shop, how we raise our kids, how we eat, what's happening with our tax money, all of those things. So try to find some stories that I think are notable, and I try to rank them 1 through 5 for you. And I'll try to dig in a little bit to the story that might even seem like it's a little wonky, a little academic, not really sexy. I kind of like those stories because there's a lot of very important details and the stuff that's not very sexy in the world today. So we're going to start with one of those stories here at number one. The Commerce Department today reported that the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index rose 0.3% in August from a month ago and is up 2.7% from last year. Now, those were the estimates of the economists. And this is the gauge that the Federal Reserve likes to look at more than just about anything else. So what do we make of this? All right, that means that if you get a 0.3% rise of prices in August, if that happens for 12 straight months, you have a 3.6% inflation rate in the country. Well, that's a little high. When President Trump was in office before, he had it down to a little under 2. The Federal Reserve is trying to get to right around 2. 3.6 is high. But to say that 1 month extrapolated over 12, you can paint an accurate picture, that's a little bit of a stretch too. So then they look at the year-over-year numbers for August. Well, prices a year ago in August versus this year in August, up 2.7%. Again, not horrible, a little better than the 3.6, and probably a number that bears a little bit more or carries a little more credibility to it. So you got 3.6, 2.7, so that's where you are on those numbers. Why does this matter? Well, it's most of the time I would tell you that if the numbers are in line with economist estimates, it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, who cares what people expect they are? What matters is what they mean and what they do. But the fact that they were in line with estimates indicates that there's not a shock value here. And that's really important right now because the Federal Reserve is starting to move on interest rates. We are going to get, we think, 3 rate cuts before the end of the year for 0.75%, a quarter each time. And we might even get one at a half point that would get us to a potential of 1 full percentage point of a decrease by the end of the year. But if you get stunning numbers in these things, that could cause the Federal Reserve to go one of two ways. They could cut harder or they could cut softer. And I think a lot of people that I talk to in the business community would like them to cut harder. They definitely do not want a lighter cut. They definitely want more than less. So the fact that the numbers came in line with estimates means that there's nothing there to make anybody say, for sure, inflation is flying upward, so we cannot cut rates any further. We're going to pour gas on that fire. So that's a good thing there. So that matters that we're not talking about a big change. And when you take a look at where we're at on that 2.7 number, that is also a number that will give people a feeling that inflation is generally under control. And so this should feed into another quarter, if not a half point in the next meeting and potentially another one before the end of the year as well. 2.7% isn't going to sound any alarm bells. The 0.3% might be a little bit, but again, no stunning numbers there. So I think in the long run, when you take a look at this, you'd like those numbers to be down a little bit. I think pretty much everybody that I trust when I listen to economic news tells me that the tariffs under President Trump, again, tariffs will only move interest rates, will only move inflation, higher one time. And after that, there's not an increase anymore. The cost of living and the price level stays elevated, but the rate of the increase does not. Hopefully that makes sense. So overall, I think there's some things here to make us feel like the tariffs have something to do with this, but not a major amount. And if you're interested in playing the long game, which President Trump is doing, and I applaud him for doing that, there's going to be a little bit of headwind in the short term. And even President Trump said that himself. So overall, I think this is, I've talked a long time about what I think is probably a nothing burger of a report. But because it's a nothing burger, that's a very, very important thing, if that makes sense. So there you go. Story number two, we're talking about free speech. We're talking about entertainment. We're talking about how powerful conservative voices might be to our TV broadcast groups that are in our country. Sinclair Broadcast Group is bringing Jimmy Kimmel's late night show back to its ABC affiliate stations. Jimmy Kimmel, you know the whole story. I won't go into all of it, but it was Sinclair and Nexstar that even though ABC brought him back after a brief suspension, those two groups said, no, we are hearing from our viewers and our advertisers that they don't want Jimmy Kimmel on the air any longer. Well, Sinclair has changed its story, and I'm not exactly sure if that means that conservatives have stopped calling in or if Sinclair is feeling like, hey, you know, this is no big deal anymore. But generally speaking, I think people on the conservative side who had hoped that this would sting Jimmy Kimmel for a longer amount of time are not getting nearly as much as they had hoped. Story number three, Fargo City Commission is going to push off a decision to potentially convert the mayor's role into a full-time position. At least that's the recommendation that's coming before the City Commission on Monday. Mayor Mahoney had been pushing. He's going to be done here next summer when his term ends. He had been pushing the idea of moving it to a full-time position with an annual salary of $100,000. Well, now, apparently, something has changed, and they are going to consider a recommendation to push that off, maybe until after Mahoney is out. I don't know. I thought this was a good time to look at it because we didn't have a conflict of interest with the mayor, but apparently that's going to last for a little while longer. Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, has all but told you that he's running for governor of the state of Minnesota. And I have to wonder, I had Michelle Tafoya on a few days ago, and she said she got a call from a very prominent Republican in the state of Minnesota who's asked for her help in putting a campaign together, and because that's one of the many reasons that she said that she's not considering running for any offices in 2026. Well, Mike Lindell told the Star Tribune of Minnesota, we're about 99% there of a possible governor's run. I love the state. I love the country. And if I'm the only one that can win, it would be a shame if that opportunity slipped by. Lindell had been living in Texas, but has now, he told the Star Tribune, reestablish residency in Minnesota. You've got to live there for a year before the general election. I don't know if Mike Lindell gives the Republicans a stronger candidate than what they had before. I tend to believe that Scott Jensen might have more clout, more brand power than Mike Lindell. Certainly everybody knows Mike Lindell. He's probably more of a household name, but I think there are a lot more people who will say an automatic no to a Mike Lindell run over a Scott Jensen run. I don't know. That's my guess on it. We'll see what happens. And finally, a Reuters reports that American employers are looking at a 9% average cost increase for health insurance next year in 2026. And that is the highest jump in more than a decade. Not a surprise, but this is when they say inflation is 2.7%. I say, we need a number that takes stuff like this into account because I'm convinced that inflation is not 2.7. It's about twice that. That, friends, is a look at what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the Top 5 at 5. When we return, we're going to talk about James Comey's indictment. Will those charges stick? That's next on the Steve Alstrom Show. What happens next? Now that James Comey's been indicted by the Trump administration, how strong is the case? Will it stick? Well, we've got a guest who's going to help us sort through all that. Keith Gross is an author of a book called Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. He is an entrepreneur, a pilot, an attorney, and conservative activist. He is a former assistant state attorney and prosecutor for the state of Florida as well, plus served in the Montana National Guard, so he knows about life on the prairie up here as well. Keith, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Keith joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, and excited to get your perspective on this indictment against James Comey. I think a lot of us have followed the general story here that the former FBI director has been indicted now as President Trump is saying we need justice for some of these things that have happened in the past. I'll ask you some questions that I get asked on things like this. And the first one is this a matter of the president getting justice, or do you think that there's a motivating factor of revenge here that is driving his activities against James Comey?
Look, I mean, the indictment in this case is for things that are black and white, objectively true or false. I mean, we're going to see during the trial an analysis of what he said on the record to Congress and what was true behind the scenes as revealed by other evidence that will no doubt be presented by the prosecution. While the left is making a big fuss about this and claiming that it's targeted political persecution, the reality is that's not what's happening here. They're just using that as a deflection point. This is not like what the left did to Donald Trump, where they bent the law and invented charges. This is a simple prosecution for objective crimes.
Comey was indicted on basically charges that he lied to Congress. And what does this all stem from, James or Keith? For those that didn't follow the story, what specifically is he being accused of lying to Congress about?
Yeah, well, in the indictment itself, the prosecution included specifics. They said that during the committee hearing that James Comey testified that he had not authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports. The fact that they brought this indictment and that a grand jury did in fact indict suggests that there's probably very clear evidence that that's simply false and that he knew it was false at the time. You know, if you or I, if any of the citizens here, lie to the government, we're eligible to be charged for perjury. And for a long time, we've let our government officials get away with lying to us. And that's what James Comey did. He lied on the stand to our representatives in Congress, essentially thwarting their ability to hold our government responsible.
There has been, Keith, over the years, I don't know, something of an attitude. I guess I have it myself where you say, yeah, there's been a lot of people that have probably done a lot of things, but I don't know that anything is going to happen with it. Going back to Hillary Clinton and the ball peen hammers and the bleached hard drives and all that, like things you say, is she ever going to face charges for that? But it's kind of one of those kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge things. It's like, you know, people at those high levels, we're not really going to do much about it. Does this case, do you think, and then, of course, President Trump faced how many, you know, legal actions about some of the things that they claim he did. But is this what's happening with Comey kind of a watershed moment where maybe now for the first time we're starting to see, yeah, if you do some of these things, it's not like, yeah, you're kind of too big to fail, if you will, to borrow that old expression. Is this kind of a turning point in that whole conversation, do you think?
Let's hope so, because what we saw with the first Trump campaign back in 2016 were these chants about Hillary Clinton, lock her up because she had engaged in clear criminal activity. But when Donald Trump was in office, he did the magnanimous thing. He said, you know what, we're just going to move on. We have a country to run. Let's not get bogged down with what happened yesterday. And what did they do to President Trump as soon as he wasn't in office? They changed laws, they made up things, and they prosecuted and arrested him repeatedly for things, you know, like the storage of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, things that could not even be proven in a court of law. It was never about winning. It was about disrupting his presidential campaign. That was true lawfare. What we're seeing now is hopefully what will become a trend of holding people responsible for their actions without regard to what party they're in.
And if we start doing that, there's going to be a lot more where this came from, right?
Absolutely. We already saw that John Bolton was raided a few months ago, and I believe there is still a massive investigation going on behind the scenes that we're not going to be privy to yet. But there was certainly a massive conspiracy underway to derail the president's campaign, to spy on his campaign and his associates, going back to even before he won the first election in 2016. One FBI agent has already been imprisoned for lying to the FISA court to get a secret warrant based on Democrat Party provided false dossiers.
So it's one thing to indict James Comey. There's been talk from some in the White House that, hey, we're going to get to Barack Obama sooner or later, too. It's another thing to indict Barack Obama. Do you think, based on what you know, and I know that you know these people in the White House, you know what they're all about, you know their background, you know what they've said, you know what they say they're going to do, and I would guess you have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what they are prepared to do. Do you think that we will see indictments at that level at some point?
If the evidence supports it, we will see indictments up to that level. You know, I think a lot of people in America think that Biden and Obama committed outright treason in many respects. And if the evidence points to that direction, I don't think the Trump administration and his DOJ is going to be afraid to bring those charges. I believe they are going to follow the evidence wherever it leads and seek justice for the American people.
Interesting. You mentioned a minute ago that when you looked at this indictment, you thought to yourself, okay, they wouldn't be bringing this unless they had the smoking guns. Tell us a little bit more about that and why you are interpreting the indictment as you read it to say, I think they feel like they've got the real goods here.
Well, they named a very specific statement that he made. And the fact that all of this evidence was presented behind closed doors to a secret grand jury proceeding, and after seeing the evidence, the grand jury came out and said, we have enough evidence that we think it's appropriate to indict him and arrest him on two felony counts. That grand jury must have seen something that made them think the case is provable in court, because if they didn't, he never would have been indicted.
And I think this is a really important point. This is more than just what you're hearing from the left. That, oh, here's Donald Trump. He's just, throwing stuff at the wall and hope that it sticks. This is way more than that when a grand jury has said, yeah, we think there's something here that needs to be looked at, right?
Yeah, that's what makes some of the left's claims almost laughable. They act as though Donald Trump himself is going out and ordering who should be arrested. But that's just not what's happening. You know, to be charged with a felony, you have to be indicted by a grand jury. And that's what's happening. That's a panel of people who are from the community, impaneled in secret. And in fairness, grand juries are not exactly impartial. They lean towards the prosecution because it's a one-sided hearing. The defense is not present. The only evidence the grand jury sees is that evidence presented by the prosecution. So to be sure, being indicted by a grand jury does not guarantee that someone's guilty, but it does mean there's at least some pretty serious evidence to support the charges.
Interesting. Yeah, very good point. And it's a maybe something a lot of us don't think about within the process, but certainly interesting that, yes, there is not a defense in these cases. Give us a sense as we wrap up here our time with you, Keith. What's the one thing that you think the prosecution is going to have to show in this trial in order to get a conviction here? What if there was one priority or one piece of evidence, or they got to prove this one thing, what would you point to?
Well, in order to succeed, the prosecution has to prove each element of that crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And there are two elements that the defense is likely to highlight that the prosecution is going to need to do a perfect job on. One of those elements is that Comey knew that what he said was false at the time he said it. In order to prove that, they're probably going to need to rely on people testifying to conversations they had with him before that testimony that might prove that he knew. Or perhaps they have intercepted communications, emails, texts, phone calls. We don't know what they have yet. The other thing is the materiality of the statement. To make a false statement to Congress is not of itself a crime if that's, you know, a non-material statement. If you say, good morning, it's Tuesday, but really it's Wednesday, that's not a material statement necessarily. They need to prove that the statement he made, the false statement, was significant.
Is there anything that you're seeing from the Comey camp that would indicate they're nervous about this, or is it really too early to tell?
It is too early to tell. What we're seeing so far is the typical deflection that we see from leftists whenever they're called out for what they've done. He's hiding behind this idea that he's being targeted in a political prosecution. They want to make it seem as though Donald Trump is the fascist they keep calling him, and they want to make it so that they don't have to answer for their actions by simply distracting with all of this hyperbole.
So many elections, Keith, are decided by suburban moms and people in the suburbs, those that are independents and moderates. A lot of them are going to look at this and say, oh, this is a part of politics that I hate. Is there a danger for Republicans, a danger for President Trump and the White House in bringing this out right now and potentially losing votes in the midterm elections next year, especially if they lose the case?
Sure, there's always a danger of that. But you know what's important? Justice. And it doesn't matter how that works out in the electoral process. You have got to do the right thing. You've got to follow the facts where they lead, bring prosecutions in a fair and unbiased way, and enforce the law. Because if we don't start doing that in this country, we're going to see more and more politicians and people in power who think they can get away with breaking our laws, subverting our Constitution, and wasting our tax dollars in ways that we should not expect. So, you know, consequences be darned. I think the Trump administration is going to follow the facts and enforce the law.
What kind of sentence could Comey be facing if he is found guilty of these two counts?
So he's been indicted on two separate felony counts. Each of them comes with up to a 5-year prison term. So if those two terms were stacked and he were convicted of both, he's facing up to 10 years in prison. The reality is he would almost certainly receive far, far less than that.
Okay, very interesting. Keith, great perspective. Thank you for helping us understand this story a lot better. We appreciate your time. Hopefully we can do this again.
Anytime.
Thank you so much, Keith. Keith Gross, legal analyst and former assistant state attorney and prosecutor for the great state of Florida, one of our favorite states here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, joining us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. All right, we got a news and weather update, and then when we come back, Matt Simon, the new chairman of the North Dakota Republican Party, joins us. What are his priorities for elevating the party's presence within the state? We'll talk to him about that as we continue on the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you're looking for a car, Vision, Ford, Lincoln, and Wahpeton, great place to start. And they're open tomorrow, 9 to 1, so you got plenty of opportunity to get down there. It's an easy drive down there. You're going to be glad when you get down there. They make buying a car easy, I can tell you from firsthand experience. Coming to you today from the Drive with Vision studio, and they make buying a car simple. 15 minutes is all it takes to get it wrapped up. Once you make that decision, you can be driving that car, truck, SUV in no time. You can find them online at visionfordwahpeton.com, visionfordwahpeton.com. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Matt Simon. He is the new chairman of the North Dakota Republican Party, kind enough to make time for us here when most people are already starting their weekend. But guys like us are working, Matt, so let's have a little fun while we're doing it. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I appreciate you bringing me on. And absolutely, there's no rest for the wicked. There's always time to be grinding.
And when you love what you do, it's not work, right?
Well, I don't know.
It depends on the day.
I've heard that for a long time, but how about if you see purpose in what you're doing?
There you go.
And it's not work.
We'll take that, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from? How did you grow to be interested in politics and find your way to this position?
Yeah, so I am a North Dakota transplant from 2008. At the time of the financial crisis, I'd moved here from Montana. But I actually grew up in Colorado and lived there until about the turn of the century, and chased work around the Midwest for a few years. Ended up again coming to North Dakota in 08 because the business climate was very friendly here. At that time, real estate was very affordable. My money went a little bit further, and there were career potentials here. As far as politics, I've been interested in politics for as long as I can recall, and I've been actively engaged in this state since shortly after I came here, both in an official capacity and in an unofficial capacity, just trying to use the time and talents that I've been afforded by God to help advance the party and make a better community for us all.
So you are now taking over for Sandy Sanford, who had the position, and you are the new person in charge there. What are some of your priorities for the party, and what do you want to see happen now under your watch?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yes, Sandy did an amazing job in handing the torch over. She's been very forthcoming in offering assistance. You could not have asked for a better person to take over for. So I very much appreciate all of the efforts that she put in. My priorities, I've got a number of them, but really the top two are that I want to see a modernization in the way that the North Dakota Republican Party fundraises. And the second is that I think there's been an over focus for a lot of years on just trying to get more voters into the party. I'm more interested in engaging citizens and having them be involved in the party. And to some, that may sound like the same thing, but it's really different. I think one is dehumanizing people and looking at them as a number on a spreadsheet of what you can do for me to help my agenda. And the other is looking at somebody as a human being that has, you know, treasures and talents that they can contribute to their community, and understanding that, you know, there's wisdom in a multitude of counsel. So, on that latter part, there's such broad depths of talent across this state, and I think we haven't tapped into nearly as much of it as exists. I'd like to change that.
Let me ask you this question, Matt. Well, if you are out talking to people about why should you want to be part of the Republican Party, you mentioned it. You got to engage voters, get them into the party. You got to give them some kind of a value proposition to say, this is what you get from it. What does that sound like to you if you're trying to convince somebody to get involved, be part of the story here, and play a part, add energy to the movement, whatever that might be? What do you tell them about being a Republican? Why should someone want to be a Republican in North Dakota? What do you tell them?
Well, maybe starting more broadly of why you should want to be involved in the political process, and then I'll whittle down to why specifically the North Dakota Republican Party is the ticket that you should be involved with. Broadly speaking, a lot of people that maybe aren't as politically active or astute, when you mention politics, they kind of get that cringe factor and think of it as a dirty topic. But it's that kind of lack of discourse in, you know, the kitchen table topics about politics that I think have led to some of the ills that we've had to deal with here over, you know, the last number of decades, but in particular since COVID has happened. So when I talk to people that don't have a natural interest in politics, I think two things need to happen. I mean, first, you need to explain to somebody why whether or not you're interested in politics does not affect the fact that politics is interested in you. You can either have your voice be contributing to how your community runs, or, you know, the people that show up will decide how your community runs for you, and that may or may not be aligned with your values. Mm. I'd also tell them that, you know, it's really important to look beyond yourself. I mean, every one of us has people in our sphere that we love and that we care about. And if you get involved in political parties, if you get involved in your local government, then you have the opportunity to make sure that the society that you live in is one that is conducive to your morals and your principles, and something to hand down to those people that you love. Now, the Republican Party specifically, why would I say, if you're going to be involved in the Republican Party? I think the Republican Party very accurately identifies with a lot of the values that have existed since the founding of this country. The party platform that we have, which is kind of like maybe an extended mission statement, it lays out, you know, what we stand for, and there's a number of things that, again, I just think are crossover for more people than they may realize themselves. Things such as, you know, limited government, you know, wanting to be able to keep more of the fruits of what I earn, or personal responsibility, you know, the idea that the government was never intended to be a nanny state. I have a responsibility to myself and to those around me to provide for myself and to provide for, you know, again, people in my sphere. So, again, I just think that while not everybody is going to philosophically align, if you read what we stand for, and we have them published at ndgop.org, give it a read, and I challenge you to say that you don't have a lot of overlap with that.
Yeah, it's I think you distilled it all pretty well. If you just talk to people about, in your words, things that the country was founded on, small government, personal freedom, the opportunity to pave your way and rise as far as you want to go, those are the important things. And that doesn't matter if you're a new American, an old American, black, white, whatever your background is. I think true conservatives want upward mobility and opportunity for everyone. And of course, the left is going to say other things about what Republicans are. But if you can point to things within the platform and legislation that's happened and said, yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk about this guy's good or that guy's terrible. But look at what, if you want to give an example, President Trump is doing with his platform. No matter what you think of him as a person, you have to look at the things that he is pushing forward legislatively and through executive order and say, they are designed around all those things we just talked about. So if you can get people to get off of the business of personalities and people and start looking at ideas and platform points, you got a pretty good chance to win, because it sounds like an awful lot of common sense these days.
Yeah, I wholly agree with that. And that last point that you made about being able to see policy versus seeing personality, you know, that can be a real nuanced quality for a person to have. I've got, you know, people in my own family that, you know, really like the direction that Trump has led us, but get prickly when they hear him speak because he can come off as abrasive. And, you know, that's the dinner table topic opportunity I was talking about earlier, to sit down and say, okay, I understand that. My personal delivery with other people may be different than that. But at the end of the day, are we looking for results? And, you know, like the old biblical story goes, you know, when you look at the tree, you're looking for the fruit of the tree.
Yeah.
So what's the fruit that's being produced by the policy?
Yes. Couple questions as I finish up with you today. The horrific death of Charlie Kirk has it stunned us. We were all kind of paralyzed with shock, I think, for a few days, and we're starting to now just kind of pull ourselves out of that. Is there an opportunity not to take advantage of the death of Charlie, but also to just understand there's a lot of people now that are leaning in? There's Turning Point chapters all over the place that are starting to spring up. How does the North Dakota Republican Party maybe not tie into that or take advantage of that, but just let all of those young people know, hey, all the things that Charlie Kirk believed in, that's what we do in the North Dakota Republican Party?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm also feeling still very numb about the death of Charlie Kirk. That hit me in a very personal place. As far as how the Republican Party can tap into the excitement that people who hadn't really understood who Charlie Kirk was, but are now seeing the clips from him. There's a great number of us in the party that have been involved with Turning Point for a number of years, and those numbers are growing exponentially. Our North Dakota Young Republicans in particular have a lot of overlap with Turning Point. So I think it's incumbent upon us in, you know, whatever our position is within the party, Young Republicans, the chair, district, anywhere in between, if we agree with what Turning Point is doing, then I think we now is the time to be particularly vocal about it. Again, this isn't glomming on to a moment, because I think that would be horribly disrespectful and inappropriate, but a number of us, again, have been pushing along in tandem with Turning Point for some time and maybe just not doing a good enough job vocalizing, you know, that overlap and the values that we both share.
Well, you've got a big job ahead of you. Certainly the Republican Party across North Dakota has become a very diverse set of people, a lot of different ideas, and it'll take some work to bring them all together, but no better place to do it than the great state of North Dakota. Matt, thank you for taking the time today. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks for your time. That's Matt Simon, the new chair of the North Dakota Republican Party, here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, New Yorkers. We're going to talk about New Yorkers for a minute. What do they think about capitalism versus socialism? I was surprised when I saw these poll numbers. I'll share them with you when we come back. From the text line, hi, Steve. Just wondering if there's any more information on that Tim Mahoney saga that was swept under the rug by the liberal woke media over at the forum. Ouch! I guess if it was a Republican-leaning mayor, the crazies over the form would have been all over it. Yeah, it is interesting to me that this has not been picked up much, at least not that I've seen. It might be have been reported in places where I just haven't seen it, but I think there are questions to ask that are fair. They have to be done when you're talking about the kind of incident that happened, and it was the mayor and his son who was suicidal, and there was an allegation that he basically got favors from the police department and how he handled it. I think all those things are fine and fair to bring up. I thought the mayor reacted very strongly, maybe in a way that he's got to know that you're going to get those questions in cases like that. And just because someone's asking the questions doesn't mean they're being disrespectful to your family. He just didn't like the way the questions came across. I would like to see more conversation about that. I think the fact that Mayor Mahoney also is a few months away from being done is maybe why some people aren't picking it up. But there has to be an understanding of what's right and wrong as well. And I think those are fair questions to ask. Maybe there's nothing to see here. I don't know. But I think there is, it sounds like there is enough there to at least warrant some discussion. And I think if it were, yeah, if it was Kevin Cramer who had had, you know, allegations like that going on, I do believe that you'd see different reporting. I'm not going to single out the forum necessarily or any other individual news organization, but it does seem that nobody wants to really dig into that question and ask, you know, what's happening there. Apparently, Michelle Turnberg sent this to North Dakota Attorney General's office, and it hasn't gone anywhere there either because she feels like it's something that the AG should be involved with. So my sense is you're going to hear something about all of this as time goes on. We just maybe haven't heard it yet. But thank you for the question there. New York City voters, in a poll from Fox News, it was found that 48% of New Yorkers have a positive view of capitalism, and on socialism, 41% of New Yorkers have a favorable view. So capitalism wins by 7 points in New York City, 48 to 41. This can only happen when you have a horribly run city. That's all I can tell you. Because if capitalism is done the way it's supposed to, you'd never want to go to anything different. Lenin was a genius, and he couldn't figure out how to do it. These clowns are certainly not going to find a way. Have a great night, my friend. Keep on flying that flag.